Taking a look at James and John, and in Luke chapter number 9, Luke chapter number 9, Luke chapter number 9, we are going to look at two of the disciples. Really, what we could do is we're trying to, it seems like we've been chipping away one disciple at a time. We could go through all the disciples, but I think as we go through this specific account, and especially when you think about, and I hope you understand that when I was preparing the messages and preparing the structure maybe of the messages, I thought about each of the disciples and, you know, and the different things that transpired from the very beginning of where they were in the ministry, and maybe as time has went on, well, this is towards the end, and so you would expect some things to be learned from the disciples, and we're going to take a look at James and John, and I hope that more than anything, now we're really starting to see why God called them the way that He did, and now we're going to really start to see of the main purpose of why He desired to say, come and follow me. So I hope that as we take a look at this, this will be a real challenge for us. Verse number 51, chapter 9, verse number 51. And it came to pass, when the time was come that He should be received up, He steadfastly set His face to go to Jerusalem. Now this is speaking of Christ. Verse number 52, and sent messengers before His face, and they went and entered into a village of the Samaritans to make ready for Him. And they did not receive Him, because His face was as though He would go to Jerusalem. And when His disciples, James and John, saw this, they said, Lord, wilt Thou that we command fire to come down from heaven and consume them as Elias did? Sometimes you almost have to ask a question. Out of all the things to say, that's what you say. But there is a reason why they said what they said. Verse number 55. And He turned and rebuked them and said, ye know not what manner of spirit ye are of. For the Son of Man is not to come to destroy men's lives, but to save them. And they went into another village. Father, we ask for Your help and we ask for Your blessing. It has been a joy. It has been a blessing being able to preach, to fellowship, to be able to be just to rub shoulders with the saints of God here at Shining Light Baptist Church. And I pray that my desire would be that Your Word would penetrate the hearts and it would fall on good ground to see fruit and to see some byproduct that we can start implementing into our lives, that we might be really the authentic disciples that You want us to be. We know that if You desire for us to be authentic disciples, there comes our responsibility in living out as authentic disciples. And if there's ever something that a world needs to see, it's to see some true followers of Jesus Christ. And I pray that we would walk away with our hearts full. I pray that we would walk away with knowing that we've surrendered, we've followed You, we've committed our work over to You. And even what we're going to look at tonight, that we would be challenged, and I pray in a way that would be a huge help to the work of missions in general, but also that would be a huge help to what You desire for us to be as a disciple that You see fit. We love You and thank You. We ask for Your special blessing upon this time in Jesus' name. Amen. I want you to just imagine with me as we get into this. If we were to send out a resume looking for a pastor, by the way, I'm not personally, if you were to ask me, I'm not big on resumes and I'm big on all that. But if you were to send out a resume looking for a pastor and you'd have some of these questions, I wonder how we would respond to this individual or individuals that would fill out this questionnaire in reference to some of these questions. Let's take a look at some of these questions. Do you have any personal experience? These men would respond? Well, we followed the Lord for 3.5 years. We have been involved in hands-on ministry. We have preached. We have taught. We've invited people to come listen to the master teacher speak. Second question, do you have any honors or special accomplishments that we should know about? And they're probably looking around thinking, well, I can probably preach a better message than you can or whatever. But if they were to give out special honors, it would be not anything that they have done in particular, but being able to be on the coattails of Jesus Christ. And if there's any special maybe accomplishments or maybe anything that would really stand out, some of them might be able to say, we've been there at the Mount of Transfiguration. That's a pretty big thing. And being able to hear the Father speak, that's a pretty big accomplishment. Maybe that's how they might maybe boast themselves in. Here's a third question. Do you have anything in your past experience struggles that we should know about? Yes or no? Be honest. Yes. If yes, please explain. Well, we've argued of who would be the greatest. We've denied the Lord. I denied the Lord 3 times, one would say. Doubted that he rose again from the dead. Requested to sit down on his right hand. Forsook the Lord and fled. And so we ask the question as we get this resume, do we vote them in? Probably not. Just with all the different struggles, and yeah, he might have some good things here and there, but especially that last question might stand out to me and say, whoa, there's a lot of baggage. But out of all the different things that they were able to experience, and all the different things that they were able to confront, yet God still used them. And you think about these same individuals that if we were to hand out that questionnaire, and they were just supposed to fill that thing out, and being able to take a look at this, come across our desk and say, okay, here are these guys, and these are the men that are going to spearhead the gospel of Jesus Christ. It's pretty amazing. It's pretty amazing. One of the things that I want to maybe, as before we get into the account here, for us to maybe highlight, that I think it's important for us to recognize and maybe for us to see, and I want to just maybe read one verse, and I think it was a proverb we talked about Solomon this morning. I want to read a proverb that he wrote here. He said, let not mercy and truth forsake thee. Bind them about thy neck, write them upon the table of thy heart. One thing that he highlights here is this. Be sure that you do this, that you give attention to mercy and truth. You know, sometimes there's what some would call a ditch on both sides of the road, meaning that there are those that would say, yes, we're all about doctrinal truth, and we're all about making sure that we know what we believe, and we stand firm on what we believe, and boy, I'll tell you what, we're very clear on who we are. You take a look at our doctrinal statement. This is what we're about. And there are almost some, brother, I think you can agree with me, that come across almost like they're mad about it. You know, that they're all excited about this. This is who we are. This is what we're about. And by the way, I would say amen to you. Yes, I agree. But it seems like they're off on the road into this side of the ditch here and thinking, hey, this is what we're about, but you're stuck over here. And there's no mercy. On the other hand, there are those that would be on this side of the ditch and say, hey, we're all about mercy, and we're all about love, and we're all about being mindful of everybody, but yet they will compromise everything that we think of regarding truth or things that are right and things are non-negotiable, and they'll totally abandon truth for the sake of, in their mind, love or mercy. And the reason why I say there's a ditch on both sides of the road, there has to be a proper balance. And here is Solomon that is saying this, you better make sure, I can imagine maybe David sharing this with Solomon, you be sure that when you see the life of the walk of God, you get a hold of mercy and truth, and you bind it upon your neck, and you make sure that it's always something there that would be a constant reminder that you need both to be what I created you to be. It's very important. You take a look at Jesus, he was full of grace and truth. He was, yes, was he about truth? Absolutely. But he wasn't just stuck in this ditch over here. Was he all about grace? Absolutely. But he didn't compromise truth. There was a proper balance, and he practiced it absolutely perfectly because he's the Son of God, and he had a proper balance regarding the issue of grace and truth. There were some times that he exerted truth in making sure, hey, Pharisees and scribes, this is who we are, and this is why I came. This is who I am, and there was no compromise about that. But there is something that is said of making sure that there is a proper balance regarding mercy and truth. When you see these disciples, they have been busy. They have been very much involved in ministry. We could say that there were times where Jesus' popularity and the crowds came out from all over the place to desiring to see him. We talked a lot about that with some of the other disciples and some of the other messages. And you can see, I would say, at least that first year as word gets around and about his public ministry being about the lives of people and those lepers and those that were blind and those that were deaf and those that had different infirmities and those that were able to experience some of Jesus' miracles on a very large scale, like the feeding of the 5,000 and so many different things that were done. And you could take a look at the disciples as they would be transient preachers, right? Going from one place to another place to another place to another place, spreading forth that Jesus Christ is the Messiah, he is the Son of God, and he came for a specific purpose in mind as well, and this is who he is. They were busy. But as time would go on, and I think you might see more of this, especially in the Gospel of John, where as many would come, and I think of one account, especially, he says, you must eat of my flesh and drink of my blood, and there were many that turned away from him. I'm saying many that were so-called disciples, because they understood, wait a minute, the call of discipleship is too hard. The call of discipleship is, this is not what I signed up for. This is not the expectation. And now, even as you take a look at Jesus' ministry about what he has been pushing, he's been pushing the cross. Meaning, not just in his direction and where he's going, but in the messages that he's been able to deliver, saying that chief priests are going to take me, they're going to kill me, but I'm going to rise again the third day. And he made it very clear time and time and time again that he would be crucified and he would be killed. So from the time of the temptation to the transfiguration, they've been busy. But if you were to take a look from here, from in our account, he will be, every step will be dogged by opposition. The Pharisees and scribes are going to try to put him in a corner. They're going to try to work things out where they can try to trip him up. They're going to try to work things out to work in such a fashion to get him to a place of accusation, to hopefully be crucified. That's the whole idea. They want to put him to death. They don't want to see him anymore. So Christ, he's going to be dogged all across the way. Well, I think it's pretty clear in our account that Jesus has an agenda. And when I mean that Jesus has an agenda, Jesus has a purpose. Jesus has a goal in mind. He knows what he's doing. And by the way, he's not making it up as he goes. He's God manifest in the flesh. He's providential. He sees ahead. He knows everything that's going on. All the pieces are right where they're supposed to be. And now he gets to a place in what we cover in chapter number 9 in verse number 51. And it came to pass when the time was come, his time, by the way, that he should be received up, he steadfastly, notice this, set his face to go to Jerusalem. The main objective of Christ from these past years is now culminating to exactly what they are doing right now, going to Jerusalem for the whole purpose of him being crucified, buried, but rising again from the dead. That is the objective, and that is the goal at hand. And it's interesting what they do as they go from Galilee, actually going down to Jerusalem, the route that they take. Notice of what we find here. They go through Samaria. Now, I'm not going to take for granted that everybody understands the significance of what he is asking to do. By the way, this wasn't the first time that they've done this. And by the way, it seems like each time that they would go through Samaria, it would always raise up question marks in the minds of the disciples because they're thinking, what's going on here? This is not the norm. This is not what we normally do. And it would probably do the same, though this wasn't the first time. This is another opportunity that they're going to be going through Samaria. And it's quite significant that Jesus chose to travel through Samaria, even though this was the shortcut from Galilee to Jerusalem, just to go right through Jerusalem. The norm for these Jews was to cross the Jordan twice, to totally bypass Samaria, and then pass the Jordan River once, and then pass the Jordan River again, just to ignore or neglect and not give time going through Samaria. And there's a reason why they didn't want to give much time going through Samaria, because of the issues that were going on. And so for the purpose of the disciples was this, that he sent, the responsibility of the disciples is that he would send forth these messengers, these disciples, to a nearby Samaritan village to announce his coming and to make suitable arrangements that need to be met as he would make himself available, or as he'd make himself known as they would get into Samaria. And so we see that his desire was to go to Jerusalem. By the way, he steadfastly set his face to go to Jerusalem. This was no negotiation. This was no opportunity. And I believe the disciples probably saw this, as they probably saw his tone, his spirit, his attitude, saying, we're going through Samaria. There's no issues of a Peter standing up and saying, not so, especially being rebuked before. No, he's not going to do that. And so they probably recognize, okay, he's got his face set to go through Jerusalem. And as they would do this, they understood, wait a minute, now we have to deal with these Samaritans. And like I said, there's a reason why they would bypass these Samaritans. These Samaritans were a mixed race offspring of the Israelites, by the way, which made them hated, because it was almost like almost as they would treat somebody that was like a traitor. Why would you deny all of your heritage, and not just deny your heritage by way of blood, but also by way of what you believe and the adopting of the religion and the philosophy behind the Samaritans? Why would you do something like that? And it became so enriched and so deep into the Jews, where almost they already had an issue with the Gentile world, but then when you brought in the Samaritans, it's like you take it a step higher because you were one of us. Now you're doing this. I can't believe you would do that. Help me out. Now that's what they would face. And so some of the issues that they would confront. So as they go through this, here are these Samaritans, and I think it's also for us to understand the Samaritans also had their own way of religious activity. And by the way, this is all just information right now, but if you take a look at some of the things that they would go through, they had their own priesthood, they had their own temple, they devised their own sacrificial system. In making short, they made this new religion based upon pagan traditions. So they would say, oh, we worship Jehovah, but you worship on this hill, but we worship on this hill. For example, you take the Samaritan woman at the well. And here was Jesus speaking to the Samaritan woman, where even the disciples are saying, why in the world is Jesus talking, one, to a woman, and two, why is he talking to a Samaritan woman? And then they were even blown away when they found out that they were going to stay a while. And then they would even be more blown away that Jesus would even involve his ministry in the life of the Samaritans. And as a result, many Samaritans would get saved because of the Samaritan woman. It's amazing. But I don't think the disciples were fully persuaded, nor were they excited about this, because of some of the deep-rooted things that were inside their own life and their own heritage. And so here the disciples, maybe as they were getting this responsibility, and they have this maybe chip on their shoulder, and as they go out, here they are as they're making their way, and they start walking into the... You got to think. It's not like they walked in and say, okay, you know what, disciples, since we've been walking with the Lord for 3.5 years, what we're going to do, we're going to lay aside all the prejudice, because you know, we're super spiritual now. And so we're at another level right now. And I'll tell you what, we got the nice little diploma from walking with Jesus for a while. And here we're going to lay all of our issues down at the threshold before we get in there. And I'll tell you what, when we get in, we're going to make ourselves available. We're going to take the reproach. We're going to take up our cross. Sarcastic, sarcastic, sarcastic. And that's what we're going to do. We're going to, no, I believe when they walked into the area of Samaria, in this specific village, they probably had issues. They already had resentment built up in their own life. They're thinking, man, it's been a while since we've been able to go through Samaria, and here we are again. Man, I'm tired of dealing with this. I thought we would be for sure to go out of our way. And obviously, we're not going to argue with the Lord about this. And to top it all off, he's not the one that's going to be leading this. He's going to stay back a little bit, and he's asking us to go ahead to make preparations, to make arrangements for him. So that means that we have to interact with them. We have to talk with them. We have to figure out what we can get by way of food and sleeping arrangements and all the other things that are necessities for this trip, especially if we know that we're going through to Jerusalem and this is where we're going, we're going to have to do this. And so they go through this. And as they get in there, they're not welcome. I said that's one perspective, one perspective that the Jews had of the Samaritans. And it's not like the Samaritan says, oh, well, we're just going to be partial with everybody too. They didn't like the Jews either. And as they see them coming, they're saying, hey, we want nothing to do with you. And probably maybe with by way of questioning, well, what matter of business are you? I mean, what are you here for? I mean, what's your business for? Well, we're just needing. Well, you don't have to ask all these questions. We're just needing a room. So no, what you tell me before I open up a room. What's your business here? And this is all out of the account. I'm not making this up. Say, well, we're going to Jerusalem. Oh yeah, Jerusalem, huh? No, there's no room. See, it's not like there's no room in the inn because it was all taken up. The Samaritans actually went out of their way to become inhospitable to say, no, you're not welcome here. And let me just make a little phone call over here. And I'm just, you know what I mean? Send a little messenger. Here comes the site. No, don't let them in because they're going to Jerusalem. You say, why would they be so messed up about somebody going to Jerusalem? Because that's what it says here. Notice in verse number 53. And they did not receive him. Notice this. Why not? Because his face, Jesus, was as though he would go to Jerusalem. See, the issue at hand was that they had their place of worship. And it was at Mount Gerizim, nowhere near Jerusalem. And they said, wait a minute, we don't believe the same way, and we're not on the same page, and we don't agree, and we're not seeing things like how you see things, and we're pretty staunch, and we're pretty religious in our activity and what we believe, and we're not going to support what you're about because we already know you're going to Jerusalem, well, because you've got some business that you need to take care of. And I'm sure it's not just making sure that you're going to pay bills or anything. It's religious business. And guess what? We're not supporting that. We're not interested in that. You should have known that before you got here. That was their attitude, and that was the spirit all the time. That's why the Samaritan woman standing back said, why are you talking to me? I can't believe you know that we have our place. Even a woman like that understood the tension. And here are these disciples receiving this news. Well, that's a blessing. Sorry, guys. You know, I guess we're just going to have to move on and just make it work. And they told us to basically get out. And, you know, we're not welcome here. I mean, they did not, borrowing from the scripture here, receive us. And they did not receive us. There's only one other way to say it. They rejected us. And so, come on, guys. Come on. Maybe I'm the only one enjoying this. No, you don't understand. We're talking about Simon the Zealot, Peter, who's a hothead, if Andrew is a brother to Peter, he's probably a hothead too. Just guessing. I'm going to deal with James and John here in just a minute. But you take a look at some of the other disciples. Nathaniel. You take a look at maybe like Judas. He probably came across all spiritual when he was lost. Right? And here's all these guys that when you get... By the way, there's something about it where when you get a bunch of guys together... Well, Hunt, you might know this. You get a bunch of construction guys together... Because, you know, I think of construction guys, I think, you know, they're men. They're hard working, they're get after type of guys. You don't see a lot of passive guys. Hi, how are you? Would you like, I'll hold the nail, you hammer, go ahead. You don't see that. You see a lot of guys that are like, hey, what's up? And there's this camaraderie that you don't want to make yourself look vulnerable. And I'm just speaking out loud, but that's the reality when you get a bunch of guys together. And here are these guys that are receiving the same news. And it's the same response to all of them. And here they are all feeding off each other as they are now walking out and saying, they've rejected us, we're done. And I can see now as the undertone current of what's being said with so-and-so and with Mr. Disciple so-and-so and this disciple over here, there is a spirit that is there that is just saying, I'm sick and tired. I'm sick and tired of dealing with these individuals. I'm tired of messing around with... And I can handle being rejected, but I can't handle being rejected by something like this. And I'm sick and tired of being able to deal with... Yeah, yeah, I'm in agreement with you too, man. Yeah. You see, that's what's going on. Because when they get back, notice what takes place in verse number 54. And when his disciples, James and John, saw this, stop. James and John, there's this inner circle. You can take a look at Scripture and you can take Peter, James, and John. It's like that's the inner circle right there. I mean, if you were to take a look at the guys that are more of the, you know, you take a look at the leadership that was there, James and John, they were part of that group. So when I said that there's probably a lot of guys, you know, talking and speaking with the undercurrent, I think that there are certain guys leading the way in this conversation. James and John are probably the two guys that are leading the way in the conversation. Because here is James and John, the Bible says, and this is even before this account, they are the son of Boanerges, meaning the sons of commotion. When you think of nicknames, you know, there's different nicknames that you give to so-and-so, and you have, and maybe it's attributed to something that was going on in their childhood or their upbringing, their personality that you see, and you give them certain nicknames that are there. Son of Boanerges is one of the nicknames that was coined somewhere down the line, I would even say before they were disciples, because of the personality and the attitude that they have shown on a day-to-day basis. And says, yeah, there's James and John. You better watch those guys. Those guys can be hot-headed at times. Sons of commotion. And now we hear sons of thunder. I mean, they are known to, verbalize what they believe. They're known to express, not like some other passive individuals and say, oh, well, I'll just keep this as an unspoken. Not them. They are going to let you know what they think about a matter. And here is James and John. Ooh, they're hot. People, I'm talking about these men that were zealous, thunderous, passionate, fervent. By the way, there's nothing wrong with zeal. But once again, there's a ditch on both sides of the road. And here they are, we would say, they are in the ditch. Here they are, they come out with the other disciples behind them. Notice in verse 54, when his disciples, James and John, saw this, they said, Lord, wilt thou that we command fire to come down from heaven and consume them, even as Elias did? Now, picture this. Here as they're coming back, they already got the tone, yeah, not excited. And here James and John are talking among themselves, you know what, we're getting sick and tired of this, and this is not the first time that we've had issues here and there. But I'll tell you, I know that there's been other stories that Jesus has posed parables and illustrations, making Samaritans heroes. I was not very fond of those parables. And yes, I understand all of this is just on the, I mean, this is just so fresh. It's like someone just took a knife and stabbed me right in the back, and I just cannot stand this, and everybody else. And it's almost like James and John's leading this, and they finally see the Lord. And maybe it was Peter that put them up to this. I don't know. I'm the one doing the preaching here. And they said, hey, well, there's the Lord. Why don't you talk to him about it? Well, fine. James and John come up to the Lord. And they said, you know what? They didn't receive us. Obviously, they said no. And Jesus might have turned his back. He says, whoa. I've got a thought here. Since they did not receive us, why don't we do this? Let's call fire down from heaven to consume them, even as Elias did or Elijah did. Now, you might not recognize this, but to say something like that almost off the cuff, I mean, when you read it from the surface, it's like, out of all the things that you can muster up, that's what you come up with. Fire to come down from heaven to consume them. Jesus just stops and looks back at him, and he's going to correct them. But there's a reason why James and John said, let's consume them. One, first thing I'm just going to throw out here before I get into it, as Elias said, okay, James and John, Elijah was on a different level than where you are right now. Let me just throw that out there. Okay? A little bit of a different dynamics regarding ministry at the time than what you're facing. I mean, they were dealing with Ahab and a lot of other guys. You know, I'm telling you, you're on a different level here. But James and John, the reason why they brought up specifically that account with this current issue at hand, because it was the same area, some would say, that where Elijah called down fire from heaven. Remember when Ahaziah fell through the lattice and he injured himself real bad? And he says, okay, what we got to do is we got to inquire of Beelzebub, the Lord of Flies, to see if I'm going to be taken care of. It's basically for their time, the psychic friends network of Elijah's times is really weird. And here's Elijah that intercepts the messengers. And they basically would come around and say, oh, what are you doing? Well, we're inquiring this Beelzebub to see if God's going to heal Ahaziah. And here Elijah would respond this way. He says, is there not, because there's a God in Israel, that you inquire Beelzebub, the God of Ekron? Meaning, it was such an insult that you have, think about this, Jehovah God that can take care of this, but you're insulting Jehovah God by totally ignoring him, going out of the way to inquire Beelzebub, the Lord of Flies, to see if Ahaziah will be taking care of this. Well, Ahab, obviously, he doesn't like what's going on. 50 of the king's servants come down, and they want to get a hold of Elijah. Elijah calls down fire from heaven, consumes them. And we go through this process. Once one messenger goes back, send them 50 more. Sends them 50 more back. Boom, fire comes down from heaven. And then another messenger comes back and says, hey, he's not coming. Well, send one more group of 50. And here's this captain of the 50 saying, are you kidding me? This does not look good. So he goes down there and says, no, listen. And he shows, and God showed mercy at that time. But it was in the midst, think about this, it was in the midst, at that specific context and at that specific time, around this area of Samaria, here was Elijah that was representing Jehovah God, and there was the people there that showed such, and I'm not just saying ignorance, but blatant rejection towards Jehovah, that they wanted nothing to do with the counsel of God. That they actually sought something else that wasn't even in existence. And it was a great insult to God. And now, James and John think that they have the license. James and John says, hey, it's been some time. I said, it's been some time since we've heard something like this. I remember my granddaddy telling me about this story about Elijah and all this. I never get tired of that story. I've colored many coloring pages about that story. No. Here's this scene where now James and John, they're thinking, we are here. We're in the inner circle, and we're at this place, and we have this situation, and we see this issue. And now they turn to Jesus and said, we think we have some valid information that you need to know. And we think we have some valid counsel that is so appropriate, that is so right. So what we're going to do is we're going to ask at this point, just like Elijah did, our hero, send down fire and consume them. And then people will know that you're Jehovah. And we will be your messenger. So you're looking at this, and it's like, now, maybe the other disciples are saying, until Jesus turns and says, because it says he rebuked them. And right when he rebukes, I can see the other disciples, yeah, what are you thinking? What are you thinking? It's just like us, you know, to lift somebody up and then take them out, pull the rug up from underneath them. You do that too. You know that it's okay. Notice what Jesus says, verse number 55. And he turned and rebuked them. You got to think about this. As they are communicating this, his back is turned to him. They communicated their idea. He turns and rebukes them. But notice the way that he rebukes them by way of information. He says, ye know not what manner of spirit ye are of. That's the problem. Someone say, whoa, 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 whoa. Well, how can you say that with Elijah? I think, once again, Elijah was on a different level than these guys. I'm talking about spiritually. And here Jesus, who knows the hearts and knows the intents of man, they missed the whole purpose. They've been sticking, hanging on his coattails for so long, and they've been able to see God's purpose in all of this. God has made it very, very clear from the very beginning, Luke chapter number 19, for the Son of Man is come to seek and to save that which was lost. Matthew 20, verse number 28, even the Son of Man came not to be ministered unto, but to minister and to give his life a ransom for many. For God sent his Son not into the world to condemn the world, but that the world through him might be saved. I am come as a light into the world, and that whosoever believeth on me should not abide in darkness. And if any man hear my words and believe it not, I judge him not, for I came not to judge the world, but to save the world. Say, okay, well, that seems pretty vague. Well, let me bring it down to what Jesus taught with them in the midst of their own ministry. He healed a Samaritan of their leprosy. Not just one, by the way. Many Samaritans. I believe the account has to deal with 10. And one came back and said, thank you, Samaritans. He went out of his way to speak and deal with the woman at the well, which was a Samaritan. He stayed in a woman's village for 2 days, evangelizing her neighbors in John chapter 4. He made a Samaritan the hero of one of the best known parables that we can think of. And what he is trying to do, not just by the way of what he communicated and what he taught, but also in the way that he practiced and lived out his life, he made a perfect example of what true balance was, and it was this: I am true, I am right, I am appropriate. Think about that. I am the fulfillment of everything that you agree. Go search the scriptures. This is who I am, truth. But at the same time, he was also the God of mercy and grace by what he taught and also what he showed to his own disciples. They were right there. They had front row seats to all of this. And he says to them, ye know not what manner of spirit ye are of. And what's sad is they saw this, and they adopted this mentality to think, we know Jesus, and we know him to be the Jehovah, the Savior of the world. And we understand that he's going to Jerusalem, that's fine. But they had in their mind, okay, yes, how dare you reject our master, are the Messiah, the anointed one. How dare you do? And they were solid on truth. But the spirit that they were missing, mercy, is totally absent. Totally absent. Notice what later he's going to say to his own disciples. Probably the weightiest words that we can think of. You say, oh, what do you, like John 3:16, those are weighty words. Let me give in reference to his disciples. As my Father has sent me, even so send I you. Okay, well that's, I mean, that's pretty. You said the first part, even as my Father has sent me, that's like more weightier than the next part. No, it's actually like, it's like railroad tracks. You can't have one without the other. As my Father has sent me, you're talking about everything that He taught and everything that He lived for and the truth and the mercy that He showed and the compassion that He showed and the purpose and the reason, fulfilling the will of God of why He came. As my Father has sent me, that's pretty, and He's living it. Yes, even so, send I you. They're on the same playing field. And now God is saying the same reason of why I came and the purpose of why I came is the same reason and the same purpose that you have been with me. And it's the same reason, the same purpose that you've been staying with me all these years. And it's the same reason and same purpose of even after you'll see in your own ministry when you're supposed to be feeding my sheep and when you're supposed to be involved in the gospel ministry, you're even as my Father has sent me, even so send I you. We are great at being able to say, okay, what do you believe? What do you stand for? What doctrinal stance do you have? We're really good at that. You know what we lack in? Mercy. I'm not saying, nor am I indicting today, that our mercy is absent, because here we are. Last week we actually prayed that fire would come down and consume my coworker who doesn't like me going to church. That's not what I'm saying. That's not what I'm saying. I'm not saying that as of last week something happened and you said, you know what? And you're praying this prayer like James and John was requesting of Jesus. That's not what I'm saying. But mercy doesn't have to be blatant, hostile, revengeful, or even a personal affront that they felt like because they denied the Lord or rejected the Lord. It can be something of total neglect. Total neglect. If you were to see the attitude of these disciples at this point, think about this, at this juncture, I'm going to deal with application here, at this juncture, Jesus is about to be crucified. He's going to give His life a ransom for men. He's going to show mercy that is unparalleled like the world has ever seen. How He treats a Roman guard, how He deals with Pilate, how He deals with the other people that are there, how He takes the beatings, how He takes the scourgings, how He's nailed to the cross. When at any time He could have said, no, I'm through with this, He extended mercy. Extended mercy. His disciples would see that firsthand. Not just by what He taught and what He showed, but now He's going to live. I'm talking about show forth by His own body. And the disciples would see this. And just at this juncture, what's sad is being able to see the disciples where they say, just consume them. They did not see these souls like Jesus saw. And He makes it very clear. You don't know what spirit you are of. Notice in verse 56. For the Son of Man is not to come to destroy men's lives. That was their objective. But to save them. You know what happens to us as a church? If we're not careful, we can become so inward that we don't even think, we're not even so conscious of people around. We're not mindful of the person that walks down the street. We're not mindful of the person who's gassing up their car. We're not mindful of that coworker that gives us grief all the time. We're not mindful of the, or even sensitive to the spiritual needs of these individuals that are doing just fine because, one, we don't like being rejected. And two, we don't like to see the personal affront that they openly give to our Lord. And we say, well, you got what's coming towards you. And we've got to examine our hearts and making sure that our spirit is right where it's supposed to be. You know, not too long ago, I was in Oral Valley. By the way, I'll be honest with you. And this was so good for me. It's a good reminder for me. I'm in like my own little Oral Valley bubble up there. You ministry and you, and it, I'll be very honest. It is a different, it's almost like a different culture when you get down to Tucson. Don't take that wrong. But if you went up there and you lived up there for a while, you say, yeah, it's not the same. Okay, Lord, I'm all by myself, I feel like, right here. That is the truth. Come down here and I'm thinking, okay, well, things are a little bit different. It's a little bit more raw. Can I put it that way? It's a little bit more raw. And here, at times when I'm trying to canvas and door knock, I'm just trying to get in, possibly, if I can, get in to knock doors or to canvas. I have to make sure that the gate is open. And I'm talking about the gate that goes into the whole community. I mean, I have a hard time just trying to get into canvas, period, because so many areas are closed. And I remember we were trying to get ready for a special event. I forgot what special day that we had, and I was going to go out to canvas, and there was actually these long, like, quarter-mile driveways. I'm like, oh, boy. So I make my way down there, invitation, and make my way back. I'm thinking, oh. So I go down the road, and I see this guy over here, and he saw me, and I saw him. We made eye contact. And he got something from his mail, making my way up to him. And so I see him walking back up to his house. I said, well, might as well, walk up there. I see him walk up there. And there he is. And he just gets inside his garage. And I'm making my way. I said, hey, sir, how you doing? And he looks at me. And I look at him. Say, hey, just an invitation. Pastor North Valley Baptist Church over here. And he looks at me. And he's inside the garage. And he goes like this. Presses the garage door. And here it comes down. And I thought, walk. I know how far I got to go back now. And everything in me wanted to do this. This is what my flesh wanted to do. I just want to kick that sensor. Like, go back up again. What do you think? Just you might have, you didn't know. Man, just on gospel track right there. That's what my flesh wanted to do. We don't like being rejected. If I was to tell you, I've been there coming on nine years, I can't believe this. And if I was to think, okay, what is Oral Valley like? What is the dynamic of the I'm talking about the spiritual temperature. I would say it's like this. It's like the thorny ground. The cares of life and the cares of this world choke out that seed. We can hand out the seed. You know what? It's going to choke out that seed. Oh, I got my golf game, and I've got my nice day, and I got my car, and I got my house, and I got this. And there's a different style of living over where that we're at than maybe where you minister, brother. There's a different dynamic. It doesn't matter where you go. And here these Israelites, these Jews here, these disciples, they could experience things that were very comfortable to them. And then they come to something like this that is out of their comfort zone, that is totally outside the norm. And they're saying, hey, listen, I already know we're on a different page here. And I know that if I plant seed, it's going to probably fall upon hard ground. And it's not going to penetrate at all. So what's the big worry? What's the big deal anyways? And God is saying, wait a minute, you need to check your spirit altogether. Because the same God that saved you, Nathaniel, and saw you underneath the fig tree and showed interest in you, and the same God that saw you, Philip, and pursued you, and the same God that saw you, Andrew, and Peter, and the same God that saw you, James, and John, with your buddy Andrew, and I said, come and follow me, is the same God that shows interest in the Samaritans. If we're not careful, we might lose out and totally think, whether by neglect, fear, whatever it is, and say, no, there's no need to witness. Because the reason why I'm bringing this out, because God has called us to do what? Go into all the world as a church. But we're talking about discipleship. The whole reason why he produces what he produces in a disciple that surrenders, follows, plugs into the authority of God, and plugs into the will of God, and being sensitive to all these different areas that he asks you to do, is for the purpose to reproduce yourself. Is for the purpose for you to be involved in the same thing that he was involved for. You know the reason why he got you to surrender in the first place? You know the reason why he got you to follow? The reason why he wants you to be involved and active in ministry and active in the work of God? It's not for yourself to say, boy, I'm glad that I'm a disciple. It's for the sake of you seeing somebody else that's where you were way over here, and God is saying, I want to do something in this man's life, but I'm using you as I've taken you from this whole process, just like I did with you, James and John, and now I'm asking you to show interest, to show significance, and to show sensitivity to these Samaritans, even though you're missing the whole point. You're speaking from a totally different spirit. I've come to seek and to save that which was lost. And here I believe the spirit of conviction hit their heart and they knew, what am I doing? Are we interested in missions? I think it's a great testimony to have what you have there, but I think that if every individual had a heart for God and had a heart for the people, I'm just talking about just people that walk up and down this street right here that I've seen over and over all week that I've been driving through, each one a different individual, I'm thinking, there's a lost soul. There's a lost soul, and there's a lost person, and there's a lost person. The same lost person that I see there is the same lost person that's walking down and spending money at a nice store up there in Oral Valley. Same lost soul that needs Jesus Christ. And God is looking for people that has that same spirit like he has. The magnitude of September 11, 2011, or I'm sorry, 2001, will be felt for generations to come. Of course, it's a day that literally transformed and altered America. I think every American, I mean, if you're of age, you can remember where you were, what took place, the significance of what was going on during that time. I'm talking about thousands were running away from the towers in pursuit of their own safety. I'm talking about photographs of horrified faces forever etched into our minds as cameras captured the stampede of fleeing people. Rudy Giuliani consistently talked about the selfless heroism of the New York City first responders, firefighters, police, and nobody was voicing concern about something that lay beneath a pile of debris in an underground vault, nearly 12 tons of gold, 30 million ounces of silver became inaccessible when the towers collapsed. But that never became of any public concern. Think about this. Even in the mentality of a lost world, they knew what was valuable. People. People. I see those kids on there for Honduras and all these individuals running around. I'm thinking, lost souls there. That's why they need a missionary. That's why they need a church that's going to help support them. And, you know, others that might fill in the gap there or whatever the case. And we're talking about missionaries all across that board. And I understand God's direct, whatever. But you know what I mean.
Yes, sir.
There's missionaries that need our support. You know why? Because there's lost souls in the balance. And there's some people that you're probably thinking of. Some people that you might be mindful of. Maybe there's something inside your flesh, just the carnal fight that we always have to say, oh, don't bring up that name again. And God's saying, as a father has sent me, even so send I you. So as we conclude maybe this missions conference, you know, all that we do and all that we involve ourselves is for the sake of populating heaven and depopulating hell. You have a responsibility, and I have a responsibility. And God is saying, let's make sure that truth is right where it's supposed to be. Let's make sure the mercy that God has shown unto us and has been patient to teach us over and over and over again would also be there for the sake of others that are in need of the gospel, and you're the vessel. Every head bowed, every eye closed. You know, later he would command his disciples to preach the gospel. Think of Acts 1:8. You know what? There's a place that's listed there in Samaria. I think of Acts chapter number 8. You have Philip went to Samaria and preached Christ unto them. And a wonderful thing happened. The people with one accord gave heed unto those things which Philip spake, hearing and seeing the miracles which he did. Notice this, for unclean spirits, crying out with a loud voice, came out of many that were possessed with them, and many taken with palsies, and they were lame, and they were healed. And notice this, and there was great joy in that city. I wonder if there would have been joy if God says, all right, disciples, get your way, and fire would consume them. God knew what he was doing. God knew what he was doing. And it could be that maybe you're seeing something in your life. Maybe you're seeing something that's going on in your own heart. And maybe you just need to maybe just do a little bit of an inventory in your own life. What do you think about lost souls? Do you have the same spirit like God expects from us? Good challenge for us to be able to give attention to. So as the piano plays, if God's spoken in your heart, an opportunity for you to respond, opportunity for you to do business before the Lord. Why don't you come tonight? Maybe there's some area of your life you would say, you know what, I just want to be sensitive to the Lord, and I just want to be soul conscious to people around me, no matter who they might be. Maybe there's somebody that God puts on your heart. Maybe God puts somebody on your mind. And you're sensitive to that individual. You're sensitive to that need. And maybe just say, God, I want to make sure. I just want to make sure that of what you do in my heart, whether through missions giving, whether through the efforts of me seeing people where they are, maybe it's me being sensitive to always be mindful of carrying tracts with me and seeing people where they are. Help me to have the same spirit, same attitude, same purpose that God had. He came to seek and to save that which was lost. You know, lost people, they stay lost. It takes somebody to go out and find them. Maybe God is asking you to be that person. Maybe God is asking you to be that vessel. You know, if you're saved, you can trace down, somewhere down the line, somebody brought you to Christ. You can trace down the line, somebody invited you to church. Somebody explained to you what the gospel was. There was always somebody that helped you to see and be what you are today. And God is saying, what about you? What about you?